All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. I've been a reporter for about 30 years here in Washington, D.C., and whenever I need really sage advice on what's really going on in the Middle East, what's the undercurrent, the understory, I always turn to our next guest. He is one of the most learned and trusted foreign policy analysts. He's the president of the Middle East Forum, and he is Daniel Pipes. He joins us right now. Daniel, great to have you back on the show.
Thank you, John. Good to be here.
So much has happened since Saturday. I think the horror of the images, the reality of just how big an attack this was, still sinking in. At the same time, the idea that Hamas is waging a large war, probably not surprising to you. You've been warning for a long time about what Hamas's intentions are and also the danger of their alliance with Iran. Give us your top line of where we are and what could come next.
Well, there are two big questions in my mind. One is what the Israelis will do. Will they, in fact, reoccupy Gaza and eliminate Hamas? Will they return to the situation in 2005 before their unilateral withdrawal, or will they not? And the second big question is, will Hezbollah, the Islamist organization in Lebanon, attack Israel with its, who knows, 150,000 rockets and missiles in its arsenal? I think that's a decision that Hezbollah itself will make, not the leaders in Tehran, Iran. These are the two big questions.
Yeah, they are big questions. And a lot will, in the next few days, the behavior of others in that region appear to be, you know, help define, I think, a lot of what happens in the next 6 weeks or so. I guess the biggest fear is that this could be a two or three front war, right? You could have some rockets coming in from Lebanon. You could have some rockets coming in from Syria or attacks coming in from Syria, like we saw yesterday. And then, of course, the primary front with Hamas. Can Israel defend on all three fronts if that is the worst case scenario? And what does the United States do to make sure that we back Israel 120%?
Well, I couldn't tell you in detail what the Israeli military capabilities are on the three fronts, but I think the Israelis are prepared for that. After all, they've faced in the past many times. So I would expect they can deal with multiple fronts. As for the United States, again, the big question is concerning the Israeli actions in Gaza. President Biden and everyone in the top leadership in Washington has been crystal clear that the United States stands by Israel, that this was a horrid attack, and Israel couldn't ask for more. But that's the easy part. The difficult part will be going ahead. Should the Israelis have a ground operation that retakes Gaza, what will they be saying then? Will they be pulling back? Will it be criticizing? Will they be saying stop? Or will they say, go ahead, do what you have to do?
Yeah, no, it really is remarkable. I want to talk about the United Nations, because obviously at some point, those countries that have been sympathetic to Palestine will try to use whatever Israel does in the counteroffensive to return security to the Gaza and the south side of Israel. They'll use it as an effort. There was already that extraordinary moment yesterday where the UN Human Rights Council observed a moment of silence, and you thought they were mourning the Israeli victims, but in fact, they weren't, were they?
Well, they're mourning the victims in Palestine and elsewhere.
Does Israel need America's support, particularly in places like the UN right now, to make sure there isn't a boomerang?
I don't think, Israel can always use American support, but I don't think there's too much of a prospect of a boomerang. If you look at the Security Council, it looks like the five permanent members, four are with Israel, and the fifth being Russia. I mean, even China is. But Russia is not. And Russia, of course, will be on the other side of any ally of the United States. Now, the Russian-Israeli relationship has been a cautious one for some 20 years. Putin has been friendly. He went to the Western Wall and prayed. He has had innumerable meetings with Netanyahu. The Israelis have been cautious in the Ukraine war. Their sympathies are clearly with Ukraine, but they have not done all they could. Both of them are important to the other. I would expect the Russians would veto a pro-Israel resolution, but I don't think they would do much more than that.
Yeah, more symbolic than engaged. Danny, I want to talk a little bit about the rhetoric that has come out since the attacks on Saturday. Hamas has called, particularly for this Friday, to be a violent uprising of all of Israel's Muslims against Israel. There are other ones that make suggestions about the United States. There was a bolo out from the Customs Border Protection Agency to be on the lookout for Jordanian men buying one-way tickets at the last minute. The threat matrix probably is not just high blinking red in Israel, Western, and even in the United States, probably on a higher guard than they were maybe 48, 72, certainly a week ago.
Yes, agreed. The biggest issue will be Israel, the Muslims of Israel, who constitute nearly one-fifth of the population of Israel, and who, in the last round of fighting between Hamas and Israel in May 2021, did go to the streets, did set things on fire, did engage in violence. This was a traumatic moment for Israel when its Muslim minority, elements of its Muslim minority, got violent. So the big question is, what will they do now? I'm inclined to say they're going to stay home. I think the Israeli Muslim citizens are perfectly aware of the outrage and fury among the Jewish population of Israel, and will not challenge the majority Jewish population. It could get ugly very fast. So I think they will be cautious, is my prediction.
You had a very powerful op-ed in the Wall Street Journal that I read. I guess it was Sunday morning when I read it. A lot of concerns about Israel maybe miscalculating with its engagement with Hamas, but more importantly now, given the magnitude of the terrorism that was waged on Saturday and Sunday, this is a moment where Israel shouldn't stop short, right? You want them to go all the way and get Hamas eradicated from Israel. Is that the right tactical move for Israel right now?
I believe so. I think the Israelis made two major errors, two major conceptual errors. One was to become defensive, to put up walls and to create anti-missile protection and to become too defensive. And you know, it didn't work. Your defensive wall is not that good. And secondly, and perhaps more importantly, the Israelis thought that they, or this is security establishment in Israel, believed it could manage the conflict. It didn't have to win it. That Hamas had become somewhat tame, that was concerned about economics and the normal issues of daily life. Profound mistake. This is jihad. This is war undertaken on behalf of Islam. This is a very basic premise of Hamas, why it exists, to destroy Israel. So going forward, I believe that, I've always believed that Hamas is not a legitimate actor, cannot be managed, must be extirpated. And I like to quote the Hamas Charter of 1988, its basic constitution, which states that Islam must obliterate Islam, must obliterate Israel. And I say now Israel must obliterate Hamas, not Islam, but Hamas. And I very much hope the Israelis do that, get rid of it, no more.
Yeah. And for what will be, I guess there's two, obviously there's a ground war phase that's going to be now. That's going to be a difficult time because it's going to be urban warfare. At some point, Israel will prevail because it has military superiority. What comes next? What should we be planning for now? What should the United States, Israel, and the Western world be planning to create a Palestinian region that doesn't have this form of extremism in the center of its government?
Right. Well, here I'm an optimist. Here I believe, I'm writing an article right now with the working title, An Optimist Looks at Gaza. And I'm not historically an optimist, but I am here. I think that what Hamas has done to the population of Gaza in the last 15 years, since it first started attacking Israel in late 2008, has been something unique in human history. That's a challenge to you and the audience to tell me I'm wrong, but I never heard, I can't remember ever, of a governing power, a government, really, in fact, that attacks a much stronger neighbor, knowing it's going to lose, knowing it's going to take casualties, knowing it's going to get bombed, knowing the electricity and water and fuel and medicine are going to be disrupted, knowing all this, but wanting to get the bloody nose for public relations purposes, and its population gets hit over and over and over again. And the more casualties in that population, the better. The better it is for public relations. You know, we had 2,000 dead. How many Israelis are dead? How many Palestinians dead? You know? This is unique experience, I believe. Evil experience that the Hamas imposed. This medieval totalitarian rulership imposed on this population. And I draw the conclusion, not just from this, but also from anecdotal and survey research, that the Gazans are fed up. The Gazans want to... I'm not saying the Gazans like Israel. I'm saying they're fed up with this. And now they're going to go through something even more horrible than in the past that their rulers imposed on them. So I believe, I draw the conclusion from this, that Israel, when it controls, should it control Gaza, it can find a cadre of Gazans who will work with it to create a decent administration. Administration will be focused on the normal things in life instead of destroying its neighbor. I am optimistic that the Israelis can foster, sponsor an administration, a semi-autonomous government that will be okay. So I think I'm hopeful that there will be good things that come out of this tragedy.
There is a lot of optimism actually in the intelligence world that this is an unparalleled moment. Once Hamas is eradicated from the region, that the Palestinian people have just suffered through so much economic failure, so much governance failure, that even the basics of just community sustenance has been a disaster on Hamas, that perhaps they're open to trying something very different because they're tired of the cycle of failure inside their community and then violence outside of it. And it seems like this is that moment. Yesterday, the president came out pretty clearly repudiating things. Not everyone in his party is aligned with him, certainly not the liberal progressives. What challenge does this pose for the Democratic Party, which has long kind of swept under the rug the squad-like mentalities, which, by the way, seem to be a lot more pervasive, particularly on college campuses? Does the Democrats have a little bit of a bipolar complex right now?
They do, but let me point out the Republicans do too. Tucker Carlson is not really on Israel's side. So at the extremes of both parties, the woke left, the MAGA right, there are distinct elements who ignore the barbarism of what happened on the weekend and are standing with Hamas. Yes, this is an issue, but I think the middle has held and will hold, and that the overwhelming majority of Americans and American politicians will stand with Israel. The question I raised before is how far will they stand with Israel? Sure, they stand with Israel when 1,000 Israelis are murdered in cold blood. Will they stand with Israel when Israel takes the steps that are likely in Gaza? I don't know.
There are many other terror groups that have targeted the West that draw their inspiration from the Palestinian-Israel conflict. How do they act? The Al-Qaeda is the Islamic State and others. How will they act in the aftermath of this? Is this a new trigger, a new propaganda opportunity for them, given what happened this weekend?
Similarity between 9/11 and this is in both cases, the Islamist jihadis engaged in an operation that no one ever imagined. Just complete surprise. Yet we know who they were. We know what their intentions were. They'd done things in the past. But this was on a scale and in using methods that nobody thought of. Nobody thought that the bulldozers could just pull down the fence and people would rush out of Gaza and start murdering. Just nobody thought of it. And so that's now on the table. But I would say just as 9/11 did not cause a great wave of airplanes crashing into high-rises, I'm skeptical that this will lead to, there aren't many situations like on the Gaza-Israel border. So So I don't really think it will lead to much. But what is noteworthy, you may have missed it, is that the South Korean defense minister said, oh, we just learned something. The North Koreans could do this. Now, that's not a group. That's a state. But the South Koreans said, we just realized we're vulnerable. We're going to have to make some changes because they had an agreement not to put aircraft in a certain area, and now they want to end that agreement.
Yeah, feels insecure at this moment, for sure. Last question, because I think it is the larger issue that must be resolved long-term when you talk to experts in the region. Iran, what do you think their involvement was, and how much does the last 2.5 to 3 years of U.S. policy towards Iran play into not only what happened this weekend, but what's about to come in the weeks ahead?
Well, the Iranians are feeling strong. They have this new alliance with Russia, which is very beneficial. Russia needs them more than they need Russia. So they are benefiting financially and in terms of technology and building their arsenal and having a new close ally. So the Iranians are feeling strong in that sense. This is a major victory for them. They have lots of problems domestically and in Iraq and Syria and Lebanon and Yemen. Lots of problems, but this is clearly a signal victory. I think it will. The great question for me is, will they push Hezbollah? Will they pressure Hezbollah in Lebanon to let loose with its arsenal against Israel or not? I am inclined to think they will. They haven't so far. The skirmishes along the border have been fairly small scale, but I would not be surprised if Hezbollah let loose with rockets and missiles.
In that moment, what does the Biden administration, which has tried so hard to appease and move Iran to a nuclear deal that a lot of people don't support, obviously, what will the Biden administration's tactics and strategy have to change the more Iran becomes involved in this, if they do become involved in it more?
Well, the Obama administration then and the Biden administration now have been forgiving of Tehran, have been willing to overlook its transgressions. I suspect this will be a difficult one to overlook. The emotions run so high. The president himself, the White House spokesman, nearly broke down in tears. I think this is a step too far for the Iranians to expect to get away with Hezbollah attack and have no consequence in the U.S.-Iran relationship. I think there will be real consequences.
I think you're right. I think there's going to be a moment of reckoning that we haven't seen in a while. Daniel, you have been such an important voice in America for so long, way ahead of the rest of the world in identifying the threat that radical Islam posed to the Western world. The Middle East Forum is an extraordinary thing. Your columns for the Washington Times, Wall Street Journal, I've read them for years. For people who want to follow you, particularly in this consequential moment, what's the best way to stay in touch with you with the work you do at the Middle East Forum and, of course, on Twitter and all of your column writing?
Well, thank you so much, John, for the kind words. Me, it's really easy. My name is Daniel Pipes. DanielPipes.org is big, big archive.
Absolutely. The best of you. The work.
Back to the 1960s. The Middle East Forum is ME Forum, as in Middle East Forum, MEforum.org. And I'm on Twitter at just Daniel Pipes.
Well, it's always an honor. I have marveled at your work when I was editor of the Washington Times. I always look forward to your next column. You are an extraordinary historian, security expert, and you have been a clarion bellwether for what we should be watching out in the world. And it's just a great honor to have you on today. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks, you, Daniel.